Welcome, everybody, to the Everyday Health Hacker podcast. I'm your host, Mike Herzing. I'm having fun, too. Everyday Health Hacker is the brainchild of Dr. Lisa Liao. Dr. Liao is board certified in family medicine and the chief medical officer of Meridian Medical and Dental and the Meridian Health Institute. Dr. Liao promotes self-care and shows people how to take charge of their own health, which is something I think we all need. My pleasure to introduce Dr. Lisa Liao.
Thanks for having me here. Once again, we're here to help people feel better and take charge of their life.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I want to tell our listeners about our next project, one of actually many. Knowing this lady, we're going to be a lot of projects here, and that's Everyday Health Heroes. I can tell you that most people with a brain want to stay away from prescription drugs. I know we all do, and find a way to treat our health problems as naturally as possible. Okay. And in my mind, anybody that can help us do that is my everyday health hero. So you're my everyday health hero.
Oh, right, thanks now. For sharing that. And I want to share some stories of some other everyday health heroes as patients take charge of their lives.
Yeah. And it's great. I mean, I just throwing drugs at it isn't always the answer. You know, maybe it sometimes, but most of the time, it's just there's a natural
options.
Way to do
there's
it.
There's lots of natural options. And in today's world, we just have to be aware of them, educate ourselves, and learn more about it. And I know we had an experience last week. Mm-hmm. Your knee was hurting, and
yeah.
Tell us a little bit about
that. I
got to
think
so
about that
because
I obviously need a knee because it's from motorcycle racing and things like that, and it was really bothering me. I can go upstairs just fine. I can't go downstairs without looking like I was 105, hanging on to everything. But it's dramatically better. Gave me a little shot and things like that, and I know. I just want to get it by for a little while until I can just, I'm old enough to where I can get a knee and replace the knee and not have to do it again. That's the problem.
And here's the key is that we can do things that can temporize, which we injected a little cocktail of natural, which mm-hmm. was called Termeal. And that's a natural anti-inflammatory that we utilize because I don't like to use steroids because steroids can cause a lot of untoward events. And mm-hmm. when I mean untoward, I mean side effects, and we don't want side effects. And there's other things. We also use ozone therapy, which is really a super oxygenation of a molecule that goes directly in and it eats up all the inflammation. So people who have a lot of bone spurs, sometimes it'll actually activate where it will get rid of the bone spur.
Now, before we get started, I want to ask you, I've heard something you were mentioning to somebody the other day, and I was like listening in, about stem cell therapy.
That's where I was going next.
What the heck is that?
That's exactly where I was going next. Because before you medicate or before you are considering a surgical operation, consider stem cells. Stem cells, and I'm speaking about umbilical cord stem cells. Umbilical cord stem cells comes from a healthy baby, 9-month delivery, which both the mom and the baby are donating the umbilical cord stem cells, and those go to a laboratory twice before they come to our office, and just where they're followed. And these stem cells have no assignment. That means that it hasn't decided whether it should be tissue, bone, or an organ. So when we inject it into an area that mm-hmm. has inflammation, it can regrow the cartilage, the padding, the tendons, the tissue, all naturally. And it usually takes 2 to 3 months to do this.
So all the stuff that I need that is missing.
Correct. And that's what I'm sharing with you. Surgery is not always the option when
awesome.
People have bone on bone and knee.
Because I know the friends that have had knee replacements, when you get to be my age, all of my friends have had knee or hip replacements. And they're like, okay, they're great, but is it really like it was originally? No, and it never will be, but it's not even all that good. And then when you get to be 15 or 18 or 20 years down the road, you've got to do it again.
And that's why stem cells are another key. And remember, everyone, stem cells have only been here in the United States for about 3 years. Mm-hmm. So this is a new natural technology that we can do here.
Oh, that's really cool. But now, folks, every week we're going to answer some questions that you guys have sent in to info@everydayhealthhacker.com. And if you actually screw up and send it to Everyday Health Hackers, that's okay. We'll get it anyway. That's cool. And all right, we got something from Emma. And she writes, I'm caring for my 80-year-old mother, which I actually did that. She lives with me and is in relatively good health, so we're very lucky. What bothers her is that her mother takes 11 different medications a day. Now, this lady has got a memory like an elephant, but on the same day, she might act like she didn't even know where she is. Okay, so it seems like half the pills she takes are to counteract the side effects from the first half. And, I read about that all the time. So where does she wants to know where she can go to find out if she really has to take all this stuff. I mean, I read this thing the other day about some lady taking 18 different medications, and she got off of all of them, and she's like a new person.
Yes.
I know that may not happen, but Can you help us, lady?
It's actually very common. Many of our patients are caring for their parents. And my parents themselves, you know, they are 79 and 83. Mm-hmm. So this is one thing that we're always monitoring, because when you see more than one doctor, you know, primary care physicians, they're your hub. They're the ones that are watching out for all of the specialists that you're seeing. And if you're seeing a cardiologist, a pulmonologist, a kidney specialist, a liver specialist, and your primary care, sometimes they don't all communicate. And they may be giving a medication that's counteracting the other one. So the person might have trouble with memory. They may have trouble with balance. So it's really important to, number one, bring all your medications to every appointment. Number two, it might be easier just to have a list, and a list as to why you think you're taking them. Because a lot of times you're taking a medication and you're not familiar with the why you're taking it. So that's really important to know the reason why you are taking it, and to be able to know the timing that you're taking it. Because sometimes people will say, you know, doc, I get up in the morning and I'm exhausted. I'm like, well, what are you taking in the morning? They're taking their blood pressure medication in the morning, which really, for a lot of people, they need to take it in the afternoon because it drops their blood pressure and they feel tired. So there's ways to use that tired, which is a side effect.
Maybe at night, so when you sleep better.
Be able to sleep better by taking it at night. Perfect.
You know, it's one thing, if you have a really good pharmacist, and they get to know you kind of thing, which I had for years, and he finally retired. It's like, hey, you're taking this and this. These don't work well together. You know, let me try to find another medication. I'll talk to your doctor, find something that may work. But these guys have been around forever, or girls, ladies, you know, it doesn't matter. But the whole trick is to have somebody that takes the time to, but your cardiologist may not talk to this other doctor. But your primary care ought to be the one, in my opinion, that would kind of bring it all together.
The primary care should bring it all together. And we know in today's society, most primary care physicians only spend 3 minutes with their patients, which...
That's not you.
No, I spend 25 to 35 to even 45 minutes, sometimes longer, depending on what is going on with that patient. And the whole idea why people go into primary care is to be able to know the family. And, you know, with many families, I'm taking care of four generations. Mm-hmm. And that's such an honor. And I want people to be able to care for their family members and know that if they have a question, that they can call out to their primary care and send them an email, send them a text, and just ask them those questions, because we do. We need every specialist, cardiologist, hepatologist, which is a liver specialist, kidney specialist, all of them to communicate. And sometimes patients are going out, let's say it's just to the dermatologist. I need those records too. So having the whole picture helps us to serve that patient and their family our very best.
You know, it's funny, is I grew up in a generation, obviously I'm dramatically older than you, but I grew up in a generation where the doctors and the lawyers were like revered. This was like, oh, Mr. So-and-so down the street, he's a doctor. Oh my God, you don't want to talk to him. You know, he's like above, it's like he's a priest or something. Not really, they're just regular people. They put their pants on, you know, one leg at a time, just like we all do. And you can ask them stuff and you can say it, and they make mistakes just like everybody else does, but they work really hard not to. And I think it's just so important to get to know the family.
Absolutely. You know? And their pets.
Yeah.
It's the whole family.
You matter of fact, you told me something the other day about helping my dog. I was like, okay. But all right, we got another question. Let's see. Laura, she has a 40, she's 43 years old and in excellent health. It's easy for me to say. Actually, she struggled with acid reflux for what seems like forever. Her ear, nose, and throat person says that everything's good. He looked down there and shouldn't be having a problem. And his answer was to stop eating Mexican food. Boy, if you live in Texas, that's impossible. Or Arizona or Nevada, it's hard. It's impossible. She's followed a suggestion that actually helped a little bit. She changed her entire diet. She's gotten some relief. But she really doesn't get any real relief until she takes an antacid. And that's not good. You and I both talk about that. Is there a more natural solution to taking the pills? I can answer this, because this stuff right here, this Allopure, this stuff is awesome.
Allocure. And Allocure is, you know, a lot of people have talked about taking aloe as a supplement for many things. And a lot of people may have gone to, they may have had a little cut or a little burn that they were in the kitchen, and they'd go out to their grandmother's backyard and pick up the aloe plant and kind of rub it on.
Or my front yard.
Or your front yard, whichever. You know, we're in the South, so those do grow very well here. However, a lot of times with people who are taking, you know, a lot of people don't know this, but when you go and buy an antacid or an H2 blocker at the grocery store, the FDA recommends that you only take that less than 3 weeks. And a lot of people are taking these for years and years and years. And that's actually why I teamed up with AlloCure back in 2004. So we've been a part of this for a very long time. And as soon as you take it, and you know this as a matter of fact, mm-hmm. within 15 seconds, you feel all of that acid just dissipate and your stomach feels good. So we recommend to take 2 ounces a day so that it can, I'm going to use a big word here, and it's called autoimmunomodulate. And that what that means is that if your body needs to be more acidic, it's going to help you to balance your acidity and balance what your stomach needs in order to feel your very best. And that's what AlloCure does. So if you have high acid, it's going to lower the acid. If you're too basic, then it's going to help you to bind what your tummy needs.
It's going
to
modulate.
So that it's going to modulate it so you'll have the very best for your stomach. And so for people who have that leaky gut and they're just, you know, they're trying to do gluten-free, mm-hmm. they're doing all these different things from a dietary, they're making good changes, but they're still sluggish, this is going to help them to absorb the good nutrients into their tummy so that their body has the nutrients that it needs.
Wow, I mean, this stuff is, and you know, it's funny, most aloe vera juice that tastes not very good. How's that?
And this one tastes
awesome.
This
one tastes awesome. I was telling you earlier, like, I could drink this as a drink.
And it's, you know, sugar-free, so it's great for everyone.
That's awesome. Where can we find that, by the way?
Well, you can go to AlloCure.com. That's one of the places to go. Or you can just go out to EverydayHealthHacker.com, our website, and you can link directly to their
website.
That's
what I'm saying. Won't we put a link on there so we can have people find this?
Absolutely.
I tell you what, it works really well. All right, now, last question today. Mark, he's 51 years old, 5'11", 160 pounds. Excellent health. This guy, I met him. He's an ex-Marine. He's a bad boy here. He rarely gets sick, and he takes no medicines. He's run 2 half marathons and plans to do more. Here's the problem. During his last checkup and blood work, his doctors tell him he's pre-diabetic. Actually, what does that mean, and what should he do?
Okay, so Mark, that's a great question, because a lot of times being pre-diabetic can have a predisposition to your genetics. So does your brother, your sister, your mom, or your dad, were they diabetic? And if they were they overweight? You know, what things can you do that you can change? And you've done those things. You've got a great weight. You are working out. And a lot of times, this happens to men quite a lot, is that we send everybody to be fasting for their blood tests. Mm-hmm. And for men, usually they'll eat every 5 to 6 hours. I have a husband that does the same, is that if we wait too long, he's going to start breaking down the muscle and it turns into sugar. So it could actually be from the timing of when they took the blood test. The key for every person that is considered pre-diabetic, just repeat the test, because maybe there was a laboratory error. Maybe it was the timing when they got it. So those are some of the things that are simple to do. And also is that to make sure that you're eating a balanced meal. Because if you're eating, maybe you had too many carbs because you've been running a lot, that also can increase that blood sugar. So it's a balance. And we talk a lot about that on our website, which is called Find Your Fit. And there's a lot of people who are very fit like you are, Mark. And so the first thing, let's repeat your blood work. Number two, let's monitor and see if we can't get you under a 30% carbohydrate rate, and keep moving forward because you're doing all the right things. We just need to modulate just a little bit.
That sounds cool. But, you know, what's funny is I remember everybody thinks, you're healthy. You can't be diabetic. And that's not true, is it?
You can be very thin, and work out a lot and be a diabetic. And the key is that, you know, a lot of these people that are very thin, when they do reach a level where their pancreas is not functioning, you know, there's a couple of things that we can do. You know, number one, of course, we're going to monitor. This is where stem cells have also been found to help as well. And again, that's alternative, and that's not for everyone. However, there are people that do choose that modality. Number two is that a lot of times it's just decreasing your carbs by maybe 10-20%. It's a small change to make that blood sugar number be the where we want it as physicians.
Yeah, they even make low-carb ice cream now, so, you know.
I know, and I love it.
Yeah, and so it's not a death sentence, you know, to not have as many carbs and just, but, you know, it used to be, I remember doing the Atkins diet years ago, and it was, you know, meat and cheese and meat and more meat and more cheese.
And your first 3 weeks were very hard to get past.
Yeah, they're really hard to get past, but it actually worked for a lot of people, and a lot of people fast for certain days, but I notice after a while I get hangry, which is angry and hungry together, and so you have to, okay, my wife will just tell me, hey, you need to grab something to eat or whatever. So all that stuff, it all makes a difference, and have proteins. And when I get on the way over here, it's lunchtime, so I just had a little protein snack, and I feel fine. You know, I'm not even going to be hungry now.
And that's where I share with a lot of people whose blood sugar is getting low. A lot of times they want to reach for something like a candy or something that is maybe granola, and those are really high carbs. I encourage them to go for more of a protein snack. So here in the office, we actually do a 3 o'clock snack, which is a protein snack. It might be an avocado, it might be a boiled egg, or a lot of times we just use protein shakes that we like.
Or cheese. And there's one thing I got the other day was with a mozzarella cheese with a hard salami wrapped around it, a panino or something. And they're really great. And
they're awesome. They're very tasty.
And they're tasty, and it's like, okay, I'm not even hungry now. And I'll have something, and you'll agree, I'll feel great, and then I crash.
Right.
And I'm like, I'm so tired. Why am I so tired?
And if you have the protein, it's going to last longer. And so that if you're having it around 3 or 4 o'clock, maybe 3 to 5 o'clock, when you have dinner, you're actually going to have a smaller dinner. And really, you should eat well in the morning for your breakfast, and dinner should be one of your smallest meals.
Really? I think we're kind of off the subject. But when you're looking at dinner, do you recommend eating it at early or late? A lot of people have dinner late, and every time that I do that, I don't sleep well or anything like that.
So it also depends on what time you go to bed.
Okay.
And, at least have 3 hours is what we recommend. Some of us longer than that. And remember, breakfast is breaking your fast. And we recommend a 12-hour fast from bedtime, from your last meal of dinner to your breakfast. And a lot of times you might do an intermittent. There's some great studies about doing intermittent fasting that we can talk about soon, too.
Cool. As a matter of fact, we may talk about that next week. Folks, always, if you have a question, send it to info@everydayhealthhacker.com. And like I said, if you say hackers, it'll still get to us. And the good doctor here will answer everything she can and answer everybody. And some of it, we may even use it on the podcast. And if you have a really good success story, you maybe are Everyday Health Hero. So I think it's kind of cool. And if you always have a comment, no problem. And the good doctor will be happy to answer all the questions. I can't say that enough. She is so good at doing that, and not everybody is. So, folks, on behalf of Dr. Lisa Liao, the great staff here at Meridian Medical Institute, our producer, Jack McCraw, and myself, I want to thank you for listening to the Everyday Health Hacker podcast. And I really hope you're going to subscribe, because I think it's going to be great for you. Look for us on social media and our website, everydayhealthhacker.com. I'm Mike Herzing. Have a great week.